When the going gets tough, the tough get going. To Hawaii for tropical airs and the slack key guitar artistry, farmer George Kahumoku Jr.
Aloha.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Gay Paris, who are tuned in as we stream along on the radio page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for the fastest hour on the radio today, with engineer Bobby Drake on the boards and producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Folks, today we're going to take a break from the tough times that surround us, and there are some tough times that surround us today. And we're going to do what tough people do, which is to get going to Hawaii for some tropical airs and slacky guitar music and great stories from the master himself, George Kahumoku Jr. Good morning, George.
Good morning. Aloha kakahiaka.
Aloha. George, you're a high school teacher, a principal, a sculptor, a storyteller, a writer, an organic farmer, a world-class slacky guitar performance artist. So being so versatile, I'm sure you won't mind some tough, hard questions, right?
Okay. Fire away.
All right, here we go. Is it true that Hawaii is no ka'oi?
I tell you the truth, it's true in a double sense. Number one, Hawaii is the big island that I come from. And I actually live on Maui, but then I have some land on Molokai. But really, Hawaii, the big island, is really no ka'oi. It's the best.
What makes it no ka'oi?
Well, for one thing, you know, in the winter months, if you really want to go see snow, you just get in your four-wheel drive, you head up to the mountain. And what we do is we take a big shovel and we shovel the whole back of the pickup truck, and these three or four of them full with snow. And we go down to the beach, down at Hapuna Beach, and then we shovel all that snow in little carts, and then we build a snowman right on the beach so you can have it all. You can have a snowman right on the beach. You can go surf, you know. So, and then if you get tired, and you're always at least, you know, 20 minutes away from the ocean. Even if you live way in the mountains, which, you know, it's in the 50s and 60s, 40s, just jump in your car or your horse or skateboard, whatever you have, and you're never more than 15, 20 minutes away from the ocean.
Well, George, your business card says Kealia Farms Record Company. How did a farm become a record company?
Well, in the olden days, I used to sell organic Kona coffee, and I sold organic vegetables like, basil. So I had to get a UPC code. And at the time, it cost like $3,000 to buy this UPC code. And at the time, I was just doing farming. And little by little, as I started recording, and then I had to get another UPC code. And I said, gee, I'm not going to pay another $3,000 to get another UPC code. So what I did is I used to use the same PC code I used for my vegetables and started recording CDs on that. It's more a thing of convenience.
So you have organic music, right?
Yeah.
From the organic farmer, George Kahumoku Jr. Good.
Okay, keep on going. Fire away.
Okay, good. Tell us a little bit about the relationship of Hawaiian music to its agriculture, George.
Well, I can do that by stories. You know, my great-grandmother told me the stories. And this story is a little story. It's kind of like one of those, like Aesop's fables among Hawaiian stories, you know? And when she was a little girl, you know, she'd be laying on her her tutu, her grandmother's lap. And in the distance, she'd hear this o'o bar. And basically, the o'o bar was made out of wood in the olden days. But once in a while, a Hawaiian would find a ship that would wreck itself on the shores of South Kona. So they go down, and then it ended up with an iron bar. I still have that iron bar in my family anyway. It's a bar that they used to dig the holes. Right. And if you're from Kona, where I come from, it's mostly all rocks, you know. It's not like, so when you try to search for a place to plant, you go with your bar, you go. And most times the bar will make a sound like a metal sound.
Thunk, thunk.
It always goes ching, ting, ting, and then it goes shunk. Then you know that you hit a nice place where there's a lot of dirt, okay? So when you hit those ting places, you just stay away from those places and you just kind of find a pocket of dirt, and that's how you plant your taro, anything, bananas, whatever you want to plant. So my grandmother was lying on her tutu, her grandmother's lap, and it was nice and hot and everything, sitting down, and in the distance, they could hear my grandfather planting, my great-great-grandfather planting his talo or his taro. And again, he go, ping, 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 and choom. And he plant the taro. So my grandmother, when she was little girl, she said, oh, man, she got so tired of hearing that song and planting of taro. And she wanted to, you know, become greater than just a little girl planting taro with her grandfather. So the legend has it, she sat there in hot sand. She thought, gee, the sun must be the greatest thing of all. So in her mind's eye, she said something special like, humu humu nuku nuku apua, those magic words, and now she was the sun. And she just loved being the sun. She shone with all her glory and all over the land. The place got really hot. And being the sun, she even shined more and more heat, more hot. Everything started to wilt. She saw she was so powerful, just being the good old sun, you know, the La, Hawaiians call the La. And all of a sudden, here comes this big old cloud. And no matter how much she tried to shine through that cloud just blocked her way, and she couldn't shine no more. Then she thought to herself, boy, I don't want to be a farmer. I don't want to be the sun. I want to be the cloud, because the cloud's the most powerful. It's blocking out the sun, you know? So she says the Hawaiian magic words, humu humu, nuku nuku, apua, claps her hands 3 times. Now she's the clouds. In her form as a cloud, she starts just raining and raining all upon the land. Everything comes up nice and lush and green. And before you know it, it's flooding. People are getting tired of the clouds. Months go by, she's still flooding and raining. She's the clouds now. And she's shining all her glory, just being there, the clouds. But all of a sudden, comes up against a huge mountain, Mauna Kea. And no matter how much she tries to push, boy, she can't get across that mountain. The mountain's blocking her way. So she says the magic words, humu humu, nuku nuku, apua. She becomes that mountain, Mauna Kea. Then she's standing there with all her might and all her glory, being that beautiful white mountain. This goes on for a couple months, and she's feeling so glorified and so beautiful being the mountain. And all of a sudden she hears this ping, 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 shunk. And she looks over there. What the heck's going on there? And there on the little bitty foot of her toe of this big old mountain, she sees the farmer plucking away on the slopes of Mauna Kea, planting taro. And no matter what she tries to do, being this big, huge mountain, she can't even move. She can't even get this guy to stop. All he's doing is ping, 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 shoo, planting his taro. Then she thinks to herself, even being the big old mountain, she can't do anything to stop this farmer for planting. So she figures, gee, the farmer must be the most powerful of all. So she says those magic words, humu humu, nuku nuku, apua, claps her hands 3 times. And she's back into the farmer's granddaughter again, watching her grandfather plant all his taro that he's been doing for centuries from before. Anyway, that's the farmer's side of a story.
Hey, that's a good story. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. George Kahumoku Jr. Do stay tuned. If you'd want to jump in today, you can. The phone numbers are 800-624-2665 and 831-479-1080. And boy, if you turn your dial, you're way crazy. Do stay tuned. Aloha out there. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. George Kahumoku Jr. here. George, you're studying to be a master's. What is that all about? How is it possible for the master to get a master's degree in music?
Well, I should have actually gotten my master's years ago, but what happened is I ended up, living a life, raising like 11 kids. And then I had a little farm and a ranch, and then I started a school for dropouts, alternative. That's how I ended up with all those kids. I adopted about 9. And then, but throughout all, I also played music, Music was what paid for most of the, all of my downfalls.
Music is a big part of the Hawaiian lifestyle, is it not?
Well, for me, when I grew up as a young boy, the first thing I heard in the morning is my grandfather playing his kiho'alo, his Hawaiian slacky guitar. And the last thing at night, I would hear my grandmother playing also.
What is a slack key guitar for those of us who have never heard her?
Well, in 1792, this English guy by the name of George Vancouver comes to Hawaii, Of course, Captain Cook had come a year before, and Captain Cook really came during the Makahiki season, so they thought which was a time of harvest. Mm-hmm. So they thought he was the god Lono returning,
Lono.
Yeah. And then he pretended to be a god, and he left the islands, and everything was good. But the thing that he made a mistake is he came back too soon.
Right.
And then the other thing he did wrong was he started to bleed. So they said, hey, the gods don't bleed. And then next thing he was killed. Actually, when I look back at the story, the Hawaiians had known what was mero before, because like I said in my other story, there's a lot of shipwrecks, and from there they grabbed the mero off of the boats and the ships and stuff. So they actually had, of all things, they had a big fight over a handful of nails. And now you think about it, he was selling like one nail for like 20 pigs or something like that. And
Captain Cook was?
Yeah, the sailors and those guys. First it would be, one nail, one pig, and then after that, and Hawaiians, like the nails for making, weapons and that kind of stuff and building. So he got out of hand. But anyway, a few years later, here comes George Vancouver, and he comes to the island, and he's really the bringer of gifts. Captain Cook came to take away, really. He came to refill his boats and, get water and whatever, provisions. And after it was George Vancouver who came with gifts. And one of his gifts is he brought actually 22 vegetarians to Hawaii.
He brought 22 vegetarians to Hawaii?
20 female vegetarians and 2 male vegetarians.
Uh-oh.
And then they let him, they said, okay, we put a kapu and nobody can touch these vegetarians. So they let these vegetarians go wild on the big island of Hawaii. And what did these vegetarians eat? Well, vegetables like grass, So what were our houses made out of? Well, grass. So now we had a problem because a housing problem because these vegetarians are eating all the grass. And then a few years later, 1830s or something, here comes another guy. His name is Samuel Parker. First thing he does is he marries into the family. And he marries Rachel Kapeka. And he marries the great granddaughter of the king, King Kamehameha the Great. The next thing he does, he goes over to Monterey, California today, which was Mexico at the time, 1830s. And he brings over the Spanish-speaking cowboys who teach the Hawaiians how to manage the cattle. You know, so these vegetarians. You know,
right here from the Central California Central Coast.
Right. And in those days, you know, they tried to fence in the cattle, and they, you know, Hawaiians didn't have barbed wire, you know. But one thing we did have was a lot of rocks and stones and that kind, and they were, you know, great stonewall builders. So Samuel Parker got the Hawaiians to build miles and miles and miles of stone walls just to contain the cattle, to keep them away from the villages and that kind of thing. You go to the Big Island today, you can see these miles of stone walls still there.
Right, I've seen them.
Yeah, and also now they got fencing as well, but more, most of this was stone walls, you know. And so the Hawaiians taught those Mexican cowboys, vaqueros, Hawaiians call them, because they spoke something called Espanol. But there's no S in the Hawaiian language, so it goes Hispano or Pani O or Paniolos.
Paniolos.
Yeah, which means Hawaiian cowboy. And by day, they, you know, manage the cattle and teach the Hawaiians how to rope and how to, you know, castrate, all the things that go along with ranching. And then by night, they bust out the guitars. They actually had a four-string bass guitar that they called a guitarro. And you can still see that in mariachi bands today. There's three guys playing. One guy plays the bass. And then another guy plays the rhythm, a six-string, usually it's a catgut or an nylon guitar today. Let's see.
It says 60 seconds.
Okay. Okay. Make this story real short.
No. Make it nice and long, but let's finish it, this transition, when we come back from the break. How's that?
Okay, we can.
Because it's such a wonderful story, folks. Tuned into the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with George Kahumoku Jr. We're talking about how the four-string guitar from the Spanish cowboy tradition became the slack key guitar of the Hawaiian tradition, and the evolution of that, and how agriculture has played a big part in giving birth to the traditional Hawaiian music that George is bringing us today. And of course, you're invited to participate. All you have to do is pick up your phone and join us at 800-624-2665 or 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with George Kahumoku Jr.
Okay, hear me back again. Okay, continuation of the story.
Let's pick it up. We're talking about, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with George Kahumoku Jr. We're talking about the evolution that happened when Spanish cowboys, gauchos, went to Hawaii from Central California. They took with them their guitars and the knowledge of raising cattle, and they taught the Hawaiians how to raise cattle and how to play the guitar. And what happened from there?
Okay, remember, they had that four-string guitar that they played the bass with. Then they had a six-string catgut they played the rhythm with. Then they had a four-string tenor guitar that they played the lead with. But when they left the islands, oh, wait, shucks. They forgot to teach the Hawaiians how to tune these instruments, so the Hawaiians developed their own tunings by loosening some strings and adding some strings. So they took the catgut, took away... Lack of cat guts in Hawaii, because not too many cats there, but you know, they had a lot of fishing wire and fishing, so they put some steel strings on the guitar, so it became steel strings, and then they took some bass. So actually, playing bass rhythm on lead guitar on one instrument. That's what slack is. You play the bass rhythm. And the lead, here's a song about a ranch. Kalana mai nei, ahaulu falakua, e iniki niki ahi ahi. Kahomea o pani olo, home of the Hawaiian cowboy. Evehi e kuulei. Aha o ulu falakua, o nauna me ka avapuhi. He viuti maa o lino. come from an oral tradition, there's always a verse that goes, ha, ina ia mai kapuana. Tell the how the breath of the story, so the story lives on forever through our songs. Ha ina mai kapuana, ahu lupalakua, e iniki niki ai ai. Kahomia opani olo home of the Hawaiian cowboy. Haina mai ka fuana, aho ulu falakua, e iniki niki ahi ahi. Kahomia opani olo. Just an example of bass lead and rhythm all on one guitar.
All in one guitar, so yeah. You're getting much more for your money that way, right?
Or less, depending on how you figure it out. Less right. Strings, less, you know, yeah. Less instruments, yeah.
You know, you talked a lot about how when you were growing up, you listened to your... First thing you heard in the morning was your grandfather playing... And then the last thing you heard at night was your grandmother singing or something.
Yeah.
A big part of your life then was music. I mean, it was...
Well, the thing is, you know, everybody just worked so hard trying to make a living. Even then, you know, when the weather was nice, they went out fishing. My grandfather also worked for the ranch, too. You know, he built stone walls, too. And but, you know, because the hard work was so hard, there's, you know, people just needed time to take a break and, you know, enjoy the music. So... working hard every day, you know, it was like a way of relaxing. You know, nowadays you gotta go, you know, on a vacation. In those days, there was no vacations.
No vacations, right?
40, you know, 24/7. You're just working all the time.
And there wasn't also, of course, televisions or radios or all the other things.
No DVDs, no Game Boys.
none of the great distractions that we plague ourselves with today. So the music, of course, was much more important then.
Well, the music thing, I think, brought a lot of comfort, you know. And it actually started out in of all things, I always would use the voices, you know, and rhythms, you know. Ulili ho o handa e, ulili ha hana, ulili ne, ulili ha hana. And you use, like, stone sticks that you find in your voices. But then... along came those missionaries also about the same time as Captain Cook and, you know, and they mostly came from Boston. So along with them, they brought all this beautiful choir music and piano. Yeah. And all of a sudden we had melodies now, you know.
So before it was rhythm.
Yeah, it was rhythm and chanting.
You had the rhythm section going, and the missionaries brought the melodies.
Yeah, the melodies out. And the next thing you know, you're singing all these beautiful songs like...
sing one for us.
Loco. Mai kai e na nino ola mai ia u loko mai kai e ho mana o i o mai maka u e he o. La no, here's another one from the time. Yesu no kauhi hihipa, kauhi pa mai kai e ia mako ka ohana ke ho olohe ahai. Kai aha nai mai e aloha e aloha ala kai aha nai mai. And still another hymn. Ake ala hele o Jesu I hala hawai aku. No, kaulan nai kawai vai. Pani mai e ka o ki o. E ku u aku mai kai. E ala ho I ka u e ana kue. I lo a a e ke ola mau.
Folks, this is the Food Chain, and Michael Olson here. We've got George Kahumoku Jr. playing for us today, telling stories, and we're having a great time. Taking a little time off for the tough times that we're all living through these days. And when the times get tough, the tough get going, of course. And we're getting going today. We're going to the islands for some tropical airs and some beautiful music and some great stories from George Kahumoku Jr. George is a writer, writes books, tells stories, sings songs, makes CDs and recordings, and gives concerts live across this great land of ours. And if you want to know where you can get some of his material, read his books, pick up some of his CDs, tune into his concerts, just go to his website. That's Kahumoku Jr. Kahumoku.com, right?
Yeah.
How do you spell Kahumoku?
www.
No, that's not Kahumoku.
Dot K-A
H-U-M-O-K-U.com.
Right, .com.
Just like it sounds, right?
Yeah, you just want to pronounce it out there.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to find out how George solved the problems, used pigs to solve the problems our munchies for macadamia nuts caused on the island of Maui. Great story, lots of great more music. Do stay tuned. This is The Food Chain.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, we're back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We've got George Kahumoku Jr. George, you were singing this wonderful medley of hymns. Beautiful.
Well, what happened is my grandmother asked me to put together an album of her favorite hymns, like, you know, when she was in her 70s or something. And I said, "Don't worry, Tutu Bombay," which means tomorrow, mañana, one of these days. And it took me actually 10 years or so before I finished the album. And by, you know, and by then she was in an old folks home and that kind of stuff. And what happened is I was asked by Daniel Ho. He was doing something for the Christian Cathedral in L.A. And he needed to do some Hawaiian hymns. So he said if I knew any. Well, I had been collecting 200-300 hymns over a period of 10 years, you know. And that's why I decided to. So he teamed up, did this album. And next thing you know, we won the Nahoku Hano Hano Award for the best religious album of the year back in 1999. So
what is the name of the CD?
It's called Hymns of Hawaii. Really easy.
Hurricanes of Hawaii. Kahumoku.com.
Yeah, www.kahumoku.com.
Well, George, you know, when we people who live here on the stateside look over to the Hawaii, you know, one of the misconceptions we've had for going back forever is that Hawaiian people are very, very laid back, but we don't see any of that laid back in you. You're a high school teacher, a principal, a sculptor, a storyteller, a writer, an organic farmer, a world-class slack key guitar performance artist.
The misconception and was that, number one, you know, there was a, you know, this was a Hollywood thing. They saw Hawaiians lying around on the beach, you know, all day and stuff like that. Well, I was brought up by my great-grandparents, you know. And I'm two generations removed because I was raised by them. And the reason they were able to lie down on the beach is because they've been working all night and all day. Hawaiians they call the days po. They don't go by the day because that everything looks the same during the day. But it's during the night that things change. So they call po, you know, po mahina, po ma, po ele ele, po. It means the night of darkness, the night of the full moon. Night.
Sure, the cycles of the moon change and the way everything looks, yeah.
And what they do is that during the nights, and you know, they go, that's when they're going fishing, they're going hunting, they do all this stuff during the night, because that's when all the fish are out, you know. And, yeah. And that's when the best, you know, hunting. And all this other stuff. So they were actually working 24 hours. They're working with the cycles of the moon and the earth. You know, even planting. My grandfather planted by the moon. He farmed, you know, all by the moon. I still got the calendar in my head because I've been, you know, did that for years working with him, and also my great uncles. You know, so that's why. So it looks like you're laid back, and they're not. You know, and if he wasn't busy fixing his nets or whatever, then he'd be fixing tools or carving a canoe or doing his arts and crafts. My grandmother's the same thing. All year round, she'd pick, you know, trees and leaves, lauhala leaves, and then she'd take out the little thorns on the side of the lauhala, and then she'd roll them up in bundles, and, you know, the whole kitchen was full with all these rows of lauhala leaves that went up to the ceiling that she'd collect for a whole year. But once she sat down to start weaving her mats or her hats or whatever, just stay out of Tutu's way, because, man, she's going, she puts on her glasses, and then she just starts to go for it, and she weaves. And she just, the whole, and I mean, these are, you know, thousands and thousands of feet of lauhala leaves that she just eats up, you know, and in 3 months it's all gone, and she has to, again, save go leaves and go back, go into the forest, gather the leaves, and then soften them up. She sends them to rollers. So, you know, I saw a lot of arts and crafts stuff being done, and it was part of our family. We also, you know, had a garden. We had pigs, we had taro. We were almost self-sufficient. I think the only thing we went to the store for, which was a Kainalio, about, you know, 19 miles away, was salt. And we also had Hawaiian salt, but they liked the iodized salt, and sugar. And that was about it.
Salt, you know, so and sugar.
And I remember my grandparents lived on like less than $60 for a whole year. Can you imagine that? The rest of the time, they grew everything. They had pigs. We had cattle.
So when we stateside people would see Hawaiian people laying on the beach,
yeah, that's because they did all the work. They've been out fishing or hunting or whatever all night, and the carcass is laying in the cookhouse, and you know, or being salted. It was salted, and it's all done already. The work's been done. They just kind of relaxed.
Been done. So when we stateside people would see the people laying on the beach, we'd think, what lazy people! But actually, we're just seeing them in their repose, right?
Yeah, and the other thing too, it's a Hollywood thing that, you know, lay on the beach. For one, I would never lie in the sun, you know, because Hawaiians, we try to stay out of the sun. We want to be in the shade, man.
Mad dogs and Englishmen, right?
Yeah. So that's the other thing too. You know, the other thing that made me even work harder when I was about 28 years old. You know, I was given 6 months to live. Maybe I was 27. I was lucky, I guess. But one day I woke up and I couldn't walk, you know. And I took a step, boom, I fell flat on my face. I ended up in the hospital. And at the hospital, you know, the guy says, he has to do some testing, you know. So the next morning I wake up. And then there's my whole family. I had about seven or eight foster kids home. How it's called, a hanai, you know, that I took care of, and my own son. And when I wake up, it's like they're all crying around this bed, you know, and it's me in the hospital, and nobody wants to say anything. Well, I was given less than 6 months to live. I was diagnosed with cancer, a lymph node of cancer, and you know. So, anyway, I went through this whole process of healing. So till today, whenever I live 6 months, I feel like I live a lifetime. So I always look back at what did I do in 6 months, you know? What did I do in my lifetime to bring some difference to the world, I guess.
Make a difference.
Yeah. So that's why I have a gauge. So that ever since 27, it's like I've been on the road and, you know, towards making a difference and a change, at least in my own life and those around me.
So you've got a great story about pigs, macadamia nuts.
Oh, yeah, that's another one.
Slacky guitars.
Well, what happened is I also leased about 300 acres of macadamia nuts on the Big Island, you know. And, of course, they have the shell, you know, and they also have the husks for the nuts. And they polish the husks up, and they start, you know, after just for creating its own heat, it go catch fire. So you'd have these huge fires with macadamia nuts that would catch heat, sort of like, you know. And then because it would still have some of those nuts in there with little bits of oil and whatever, it's hard to put out. It's like putting, you know, you shoot water on it, and it even flares up more.
It's like putting out tires that are on fire or
right,
something.
Right, like with oil with fire. Right. So it caused a problem for many of the farmers. And then you got this whole pile of stuff, mountains and mountains of the husk, and they don't know what to do. So what I did, started doing, it was just a mistake because I raised pigs too. So I just threw the husk as bedding for the pigs. And I didn't put like just a 6-inch layer. I put like 3 feet of bedding. And what happened is that the pigs sort of worked their way through and they're stomping on it. And pigs are really clean. You know, they're not like horses or something that crap in there. Or like, you know, cattle. They're more like dogs. They won't sleep in there, their own mess, if you give them a chance. So I created these long pens. And I throw the husk on one end, and then they'd work it down, and then they'd only, you know, defecate on and do the thing on the other end of the pen. And then I built a ditch, and it would fall into this little trough kind of a thing. And I'd scoop it up, what happens is the pigs went through every little inch of whatever was in their grass, and they would find every little nut, crack it, and, you know, every little bit of meat that was there, and take it all the oil. So they would run it through the system first. And it made this beautiful compost. And we even tested it. It was like a 3-3-3 fertilizer.
Ooh,
you know.
Pure gold.
This is like, and I started, you know, selling it to the other farmers, especially the organic farmers. You know, and next thing you know, I had a business going. I was making more money off of the manure from these pigs and the compost than I was actually off of the meat. You know, at the time, too, my daughter was, you know, in the computer, so I was working with the University of Hawaii doing a lot of research on my farm. So we actually weigh the pigs, weigh the nuts, weigh everything, and we were making about $100 a pig off of its, you know, off of its, pig would eat about 700 pounds of, you know, some kind of material, and then we'd sell the meat for, you know, a 200-pound pig, so it'd make about a quarter, 500 pounds would be waste. And we get $400 a ton, so actually we're making $100 off of its, you know, off of the waste, and only about $10 for a whole pig. Can you imagine after the cost and everything? So that's how we,
We've got a couple minutes left. What would you consider to be your best farewell song?
Oh, we got that song written by Queen Little Kalani. Napali Tuahi Ilehua Oka. And thanks for Ben for calling us from Watsonville. Osal aloha o aloha o. Eke o na na no ikalipo. And those of you on the Palo Alto side, I got a concert this afternoon at the Mitchell Center in Palo Alto Community Center. So it's on Middlefield Road. Come check us out there.
And always check all of your concerts out at kahumoku.com, right?
Yeah, www.kahumoku.
How do you spell it again?
K-A-H-U-M-O-K-U.
K-U, that's Kahumoku.
And thank you for having me here on the show. And just to mention about John Deere tractors, I used to take them apart, and they're the easiest tractors to fix, I'm telling you.
There you go. There's a plug all over Pringle. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in the Food Chain. And thanks especially to George Kahumoku Jr. for coming in today. You can come in anytime, George. Thanks to engineer Bobby Drake, producer Carol Stafford. Thank you for tuning in. As remember, if you didn't get a chance to tell your story today, log on the discussion page at metrofarm.com. Now, see you all next week for another edition of Food Chain, where we eat or get eaten.
You've been tuned in to the award-winning Food Chain with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find food with a farmer's face on it and live.